Welcome to the deep dive. Okay, picture this. It's just a normal morning, everything seems fine, and then bam, panic. Mrs. Hewlett frantically calls 911. She's convinced her 69-year-old husband, John, is having a stroke.
Yeah.
So EMTs, Fred Archuleta and Reese Kemp, arrive. They find John, he's anxious, his speech is slurred, and there's this noticeable droop on the right side of his face.
It's that urgent, confusing situation you hear about. It demands immediate, informed action.
Exactly. And that's really what we're diving into today.
That scenario, like so many real-life medical emergencies, it just perfectly highlights why understanding these moments is so critical. Our mission today is, well, to equip you with the essential knowledge about three vital areas: altered mental status, stroke, and serious headaches.
Right.
We'll try to cut through some of the medical jargon, give you the most important insights from pre-hospital emergency care sources. Because, for situations like John's, early recognition and knowing what to look for, it can make an incredible difference.
Absolutely. Think of this as like your shortcut to being well informed about what's happening beneath the surface when these symptoms strike, not just for you, but maybe for your loved ones too. So we're diving deep into three core areas. First, the surprisingly broad spectrum of altered mental status, what it really means when someone's just not
Yeah,
themselves.
it's more than just confusion.
Then we'll tackle the incredibly time-sensitive nature of stroke, where, every second truly counts. And finally, we'll learn how to tell when a headache is just a headache.
And when it's a serious warning sign.
Okay, let's get started.
So, altered mental status, or AMS, it's much more than simply being confused. In simple terms, it means the part of your brain that controls alertness and awareness isn't working properly.
Okay.
And this is a significant red flag. It tells us that something serious, whether it's an illness or an injury, is affecting the brain.
That's a crucial distinction right off the bat. It's not just some minor issue. So, for someone observing a loved one, how do you distinguish just a bad day from a truly concerning altered mental status?
Well, that's kind of the million-dollar question, isn't it? The key is change and suddenness. AMS can stem from two main categories. You've got structural issues, like a direct injury to the brain itself.
Right, like a head trauma or something.
Exactly. Or toxic metabolic causes. These are usually more about chemical imbalances or substances affecting brain function. Think certain medications, infections, maybe even issues with blood sugar. The real takeaway here isn't necessarily to diagnose it yourself, but to understand that any sudden or noticeable change in mental clarity, whether it's new confusion, agitation, maybe unusual drowsiness, or difficulty communicating, that's a red flag.
So don't ignore it.
Never. It's never just confusion to be brushed off, especially when it's new.
Yeah.
It demands immediate attention because the causes are just so diverse and potentially very serious.
So if you see that sudden change, what are first responders generally looking for? Like in John Hewlett's case, he was anxious and had slurred speech. Pretty clear something's off, but what else are they observing on scene?
Right. Well, when paramedics arrive, they're sort of like detectives. They'll look at the immediate environment for clues. Are there medications nearby? Any signs of an injury, like maybe he fell?
Okay, context clues.
Exactly. Anything that points to an underlying illness. This helps them quickly narrow down what might be causing the AMS. After that initial scan, their priority is always the ABCs: airway, breathing, circulation. Ensure the person can breathe properly, getting enough oxygen.
Standard procedure.
Yep. They'll also check vital signs, heart rate, breathing, blood pressure, and gather a quick history, especially asking if anyone noticed symptoms before the mental status actually changed. That timing is key.
So a lot of detective work. And this isn't just a one-time check, right? I mean, they're constantly reevaluating.
Oh, absolutely. With AMS, a patient's condition can change really rapidly, so consistent reassessment is critical. They're always checking for any shifts in mental status, breathing, circulation, recording vital signs maybe every 5 minutes. It's a very dynamic situation.
That makes perfect sense. Okay, now let's talk about special considerations because age absolutely matters here. Children and older adults, they often present very differently, don't they?
They absolutely do. For children, AMS can come from the same causes as adults, but their assessment needs to be adapted. Kids aren't just small adults. Their bodies show distress differently. What's fascinating here is a specific pediatric concern called a brief resolved unexplained event, or BRUE.
A BRUE. What's that?
These are sudden, often really scary events in infants. They might involve a bluish or pale skin color, changes in breathing, muscle tone, or alertness. While they often resolve quickly on their own, they underscore the need for immediate medical attention. even if the symptoms seem to disappear. The real insight for parents is that any sudden, unexplained change in a child's behavior or appearance, even if it's brief, warrants prompt medical evaluation.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's the kind of thing that would instantly send a parent into a panic.
And rightly so. Now, moving to the other end of the spectrum, geriatric patients with AMS present their own unique challenges. Older patients might seem confused or have memory deficits, but it's absolutely vital to never assume that their altered mental status is normal for them.
That's a really critical point. So many times people might say, oh, grandpa's just getting old, but you're saying that could be a significant, maybe even dangerous oversight.
Precisely. It's a common and dangerous misconception. Common causes of AMS in the elderly include things like cognitive impairment, dementia, and delirium. And here's a crucial aha moment for you. Differentiating between dementia and delirium. It's paramount because their origins and outcomes are vastly different.
Okay, dementia versus delirium. Tell us more.
Think of it this way. Dementia is like a slow, permanent hard drive failure in the brain. It affects overall memory and functioning over time. It's chronic. It progresses slowly, and it's generally irreversible, structural.
So like Alzheimer's, which we hear a lot about, that fits the bill.
Exactly. Alzheimer's is a classic form of dementia. Delirium, however, it's more like a temporary software glitch.
Okay.
It's acute, meaning it comes on suddenly. It fluctuates. People can seem better than worse again. And crucially, it's often reversible.
Reversible. That's huge.
It is. Delirium affects a person's attention and ability to focus rather than their overall memory like dementia.
Yeah.
Recognizing delirium quickly isn't just academic. It could be the key to treating an underlying infection, maybe a new medication side effect or some other illness, and potentially getting someone back to their baseline.
Wow.
That difference, permanent structural change versus often treatable metabolic or medication-related issue, is incredibly significant.
Yeah.
That's a massive distinction, especially the reversible part. So thinking back to John's case, if his anxiety and slurred speech were new and sudden, beyond just the possible stroke, could Fred and Reese also be thinking, could he be experiencing delirium from maybe an infection?
Absolutely. His presenting symptoms could definitely point in several directions. For first responders, it's really about casting a wide net initially, then using the assessment findings to narrow it down. Stroke might be high on the list, but they keep other possibilities in mind.
Okay, so we've seen the wide spectrum of altered mental status. But sometimes those symptoms aren't just vague altered mental status. They're practically screaming, stroke, right? An emergency where every single second truly counts. What exactly is happening in the body when someone has a stroke?
Well, first, a neurologic deficit that's just a deficiency in nervous system function. It's a clear signal that something's wrong with the central nervous system, the brain or spinal cord. And that leads us directly to the urgency of an acute stroke.
The brain attack.
Exactly. The brain is incredibly sensitive to blood flow, needs constant oxygen and glucose. A stroke is essentially that supply getting cut off or disrupted. And time is, without any exaggeration, the most critical factor.
Time is brain. I've heard that phrase before. What does it actually mean inside our heads? Like physically?
Okay, imagine your brain is like a bustling city. When a stroke hits, it's like a major disaster strikes. Some areas of that city might be completely destroyed immediately. Those brain cells are permanently dead. We call that the infarct zone.
Okay, gone for good.
Pretty much. But surrounding that core of dead tissue is an area where the cells are electrically silent. They're not functioning, but they're not dead yet. They're like buildings that have lost power but aren't actually destroyed.
Ah, okay. Still salvageable, maybe.
Potentially, yes. If power, meaning blood flow, is quickly reestablished, those cells can often come back online. That area is called the ischemic penumbra.
The penumbra, got it.
And every minute that blood flow is blocked means more of those stunned cells in the penumbra cross over into the permanently damaged infarct zone. So in a situation like John's, if he's having a clot-related stroke, the goal is to get him help so incredibly quickly that those stunned brain cells in the penumbra don't die.
That's a really vivid analogy, really drives home the urgency. So what are the different types of these brain attacks?
There are two main types. The most common are ischemic strokes. These are like a traffic jam in your brain's blood vessels. They happen when a blood clot blocks a cerebral artery.
A blockage.
Right. And this clot can either form right there at the site of the blockage, often due to fatty plaque buildup, which we call a thrombus. That's the most common type. Or it can be an embolism.
Embolism. That's when it travels, right?
Exactly. A piece of a clot breaks off from somewhere else in the body. Very often, the heart. especially if someone has an irregular heart rhythm like atrial fibrillation, and it travels through the bloodstream until it gets lodged in a smaller artery in the brain. And these patients, the ones with ischemic strokes, they may be eligible for powerful clot-busting drugs, fibrinolytics, but only if they're treated very, very quickly.
Hence the time is brain. So ischemic is a blockage. What's the other main type?
The other main type is a hemorrhagic stroke. This is more like a burst pipe in the brain.
Bleeding.
Exactly. It occurs when a weakened blood vessel ruptures and bleeds directly into the brain tissue. High blood pressure is often a major contributing factor, putting strain on those vessels.
What causes the vessel to be weak?
Usually it's either an aneurysm, which is like a little ballooning weak spot in a vessel wall, or something called an arteriovenous malformation, or AVM. That's basically a tangle of abnormal blood vessels where arteries connect directly to veins by passing the tiny capillaries. This creates a high pressure shortcut that can rupture.
Okay. And the signs, are they different from an ischemic stroke?
They can be similar, but hemorrhagic strokes often come with a really sudden severe headache, sometimes described as the worst headache of my life, plus nausea, vomiting, and often a more rapid decrease in the level of consciousness.
And I imagine it's tough, maybe impossible, for first responders to tell the difference between a blockage and a bleed just by looking.
Precisely. In the pre-hospital setting, it's very difficult, almost impossible,
yeah,
to distinguish between ischemic and hemorrhagic strokes without imaging, like a CT scan, which is why rapid hospital assessment is just so crucial. The treatment pathways are vastly different. You wouldn't give a clot buster to someone who's already bleeding in their brain.
Right, that would be disastrous. What about something called a TLA? People sometimes call it a mini stroke. Is that accurate?
That's a great question. A transient ischemic attack, or TIA, presents with the exact same signs and symptoms as a full stroke. You could have the facial droop, the arm weakness, the speech trouble.
Okay.
But here's the key difference. TIA symptoms disappear, usually within an hour. Often they resolve in just a minute or two.
But it just goes away.
It goes away completely. Now, don't let that fool you into thinking it's not serious.
Why not, if it resolves?
Because despite resolving, having a TIA means there's a significant risk, maybe 10-15%, of having a full, potentially devastating stroke in the next 90 days. It's a major warning sign. So if you or someone you know experiences TIA symptoms, even if they resolve quickly, the emergency care is the same as for a full stroke. Get help immediately. Call 911.
That's really important to know. It's not minor just because it stopped. So back to John Hewlett with his slurred speech and facial droop. What would Fred and Reese be looking for specifically to recognize a stroke? What are the tools?
This is where simple, validated tools like the FAST mnemonic come in. It's widely used, easy to remember. FAST, face, arm, speech, time.
Okay, break it down. F is face.
Yep. For face, they'll ask the person to smile or show their teeth. They're looking for any asymmetry, one side not moving as well as the other, like John's facial droop.
Got it. A is arm.
Arm. They'll ask the patient to lift both arms straight out in front of them, palms up, and hold them there for about 10 seconds, maybe with their eyes closed. They're checking if one arm drifts downwards or can't be lifted as high. That's arm drift.
Makes sense. S is speech.
Speech. They'll have the person repeat a simple, common phrase. A classic one is, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. They're listening carefully for slurred words, using the wrong words, or being unable to speak at all, which is called aphasia.
So John's facial droop and slurred speech perfectly fit the F and S of FAST and T. I'm guessing that stands for time.
Yes, T is for time, and it's absolutely critical. It means note the time when the symptoms first started, or the last time the person was known to be normal. This timing is crucial because it dictates treatment options, especially those clot-busting drugs for ischemic stroke, which have a very narrow time window.
So Reese getting that exact time of onset from Mrs. Hewlett wasn't just casual information gathering. It was medically vital.
Absolutely vital. And just a small but important caution we touched on earlier. While oxygen is vital if levels are low, for stroke patients, responders are careful not to give too much oxygen if the levels are already normal.
Mm-hmm.
There's some evidence suggesting excessive oxygen might cause more harm through free radicals. So they aim to maintain healthy oxygen levels, usually 94% or higher, but don't just blast everyone with high-flow O2 unnecessarily.
Interesting detail. So once a stroke is suspected based on FAST or other signs, it's basically all about speed, right? Rapid transport.
Precisely. Maintain their airway, support breathing if needed, ensure good oxygen levels, protect any paralyzed limbs, check blood sugar quickly because low blood sugar can mimic stroke symptoms, and then swift transport, preferably to a designated stroke center.
And you mentioned something cutting edge earlier, these special ambulances.
Ah, yes, the mobile stroke unit. It's a fantastic advancement, though not available everywhere yet. It's essentially an ambulance equipped with a portable CT scanner.
Wow, a CT scanner in the ambulance.
Yep. This means they can diagnose whether it's an ischemic or hemorrhagic stroke and even begin specific treatment, sometimes administering those clot-busting drugs for ischemic strokes right there on the scene or en route to the hospital. It dramatically reduces the time to treatment.
That's incredible. Literally bringing hospital-level diagnosis and care directly to the patient. That must save so much brain tissue. And just like with AMS, I imagine reassessment is key for stroke patients during transport, too.
Absolutely. Conditions can change quickly, especially early on. So continuous monitoring of vital signs, neurological status, it's vital, usually every 5 minutes for an unstable patient.
Okay, let's shift gears one last time. Let's turn our attention to something incredibly common, headaches. We all get them. But when should we be genuinely concerned? When is it more than just a nuisance?
Yeah, this raises an important question, doesn't it? When should you really worry about a headache? While most headaches are benign tension headaches, maybe migraines? For some people, some are definitely warning signs of serious underlying conditions. The key is to look for the red flags.
Okay, what are those red flags? What should make us sit up and really pay attention?
You should be seriously concerned if a headache comes along with other neurological symptoms. Things like an altered mental status, someone suddenly confused, agitated, not acting like themselves, or new weakness, numbness, maybe a significant behavior change, or a seizure.
So headache plus something else affecting the brain.
Exactly. Other critical signs include experiencing the worst headache of your life, sometimes described as a thunderclap headache because it comes on so suddenly and severely, or a headache that comes on very abruptly, pain that gets distinctly worse when you cough, sneeze, or bend over, a headache accompanied by fever or a stiff neck that could suggest meningitis, or even if there's just a significant unusual change in the pattern or quality of a chronic headache you typically experience.
So it's not just the headache itself, but the company it keeps, or how drastically it changes from your usual pattern.
Precisely. Those accompanying symptoms or significant changes in pattern are what tell us this might be more than just a standard headache. If any of those red flags are present, emergency care is needed. That means ensuring they can breathe well, getting enough oxygen if needed, making them comfortable, being prepared for seizures just in case, and transporting them for evaluation quickly.
Got it. Pay attention to the context. Okay, so let's loop back one last time to John Hewlett's case. Fred and Reese arrived, found him anxious, slurring his words with that facial droop. How does everything we've discussed play out in this first few minutes?
Well, they'd immediately suspect a serious issue. The slurred speech raises concerns about airway compromise, but also points strongly towards stroke, especially with the facial droop. So while Reese is gathering that crucial history from Mrs. Hewlett critically, confirming the time of onset, Fred would be performing a quick stroke scale assessment, like the FAST exam.
Checking the face, arms, speech.
Exactly. And in John's case, the assessment confirms the facial droop, the speech difficulty, and maybe reveals, say, a slight weakness or drift in his left arm or hand, all pointing strongly to a stroke. So they'd ensure his airway is clear, maybe give him some oxygen to keep his levels up, check his blood sugar quickly, position him comfortably, often semi-upright if he's conscious, and prepare for immediate transport.
So the immediate assessment using a tool like FAST, getting that critical time from Mrs. Hewlett, and then rapid transport, that's the essential playbook.
Precisely. That early recognition, gathering the key pieces of information like time of onset and minimizing delay, that's what optimizes care and gives John the best possible chance. Every piece of that puzzle matters immensely.
This deep dive has covered a lot of ground, but if we boil it down, here are the key insights, the nuggets to take away. First, altered mental status isn't just confusion. It's a critical sign of serious underlying issues, which can be either structural problems in the brain or metabolic toxic causes affecting its function. Any sudden change in mental clarity demands immediate attention.
Absolutely. Don't ignore it.
Second, when it comes to stroke, remember that phrase, time is brain. Understanding and using simple tools like the FAST mnemonic face, arm, speech, time is vital for rapid recognition because swift action can truly save brain function. Distinguishing ischemic from hemorrhagic is key for treatment, but speed to the hospital is paramount regardless.
Couldn't say it better. Speed is everything.
And finally, with headaches, while most are benign, be aware of the red flags, those accompanying neurological symptoms like confusion or weakness, the worst headache ever, sudden onset, fever, or significant changes in your usual headache pattern. These signal a potentially serious underlying condition needing urgent evaluation.
Pay attention to those warning signs.
What does this all mean for you listening? Given how common symptoms like a headache or feeling out of it can sometimes mask these incredibly serious underlying conditions, how does understanding these distinctions, AMS versus stroke versus serious headache, dementia versus delirium, how does that empower us? How can we be better advocates for ourselves, for our loved ones, making sure we or they get the right help right now? This knowledge isn't just for the EMTs like Fred and Reese. It's really a vital tool for informed living, helping all of us recognize those critical moments when prompt action can change everything. Something to think about.